Sit back and get comfy. It's episode number 99 of the Divorce Resource Guy podcast, and today we're going to be talking about men, fear, and how it affects their intimate relationships.
Welcome to the Divorce Resource Guy podcast with Jason Lavoy, a.k.a. the Divorce Resource Guy, a former divorce attorney turned divorce coach, talking about all things divorce, including the good, bad, and the ugly from an attorney's point of view. Remember, you're not alone. And now, your host, Jason Lavoy.
Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 99 of the Divorce Resource Guy podcast. I am excited to be here with you. We are almost at 100 episodes. How about that? I'm your host, Jason Lavoy, a.k.a. the Divorce Resource Guy, and welcome. If you are a first-time listener, please subscribe to the podcast. You'll get all new episodes when they come out. Right now, it's on a bi-weekly schedule. It's a great free divorce resource you can utilize wherever you listen to podcasts. I'll talk about that more at the end. But today, we have a great guest for you. Today, we're going to talk with a psychotherapist, an award-winning author and speaker, Dr. Avram Weiss. Let me tell you about Dr. Weiss. His decade-long work on understanding the internal lives of men culminated in his recently published bestseller book, Hidden in Plain Sight, How Men's Fears of Women Shape Their Intimate Relationships. Dr. Weiss is a regular contributor to Psychology Today and offers workshops nationally about psychotherapy with men and helping men and women understand each other. Not something that is complicated, right? He practices psychotherapy online from his home on an island in mid-coast Maine. Yep, an island. How cool is that, living on an island? Anyway, it's not every day that we talk on this podcast about men, intimacy, and fear, right? No, that's something that seems a little bit taboo when it comes to men talking about feelings and emotions. But when it comes to divorce, it is important and it shouldn't be shied away from. And so we don't do that here on the Divorce Resource Guy podcast. So let's get right to it. Please welcome my guest for this episode, Dr. Avram Weiss. Dr. Weiss, welcome to the show. I'm excited to have you.
I'm really excited to be here.
Now, when I have experts on, or any guest on for that matter, the first question I always ask is the same. So you're not going to be any different. For people who are not familiar with you, give everybody a little bit idea about your background and kind of how you got to this point.
Sure. I'm a psychologist and an author. And at some point about a little more than 10 years ago, I started working with a lot of men in my practice, which is unusual because men don't usually go to therapy.
That's true.
But I think I work well with men, and I started seeing a lot of men, and I noticed a pattern. And that is that men would come and complain a lot about their wives and sort of give me the laundry list of the things they were unhappy about in their relationship. And so naturally I would ask them, well, have you talked with your wife about any of these things? And they almost all gave me a look like I had just asked the stupidest question that any person had ever asked them in their lives. Like, you just don't get it. No, I have not talked with her. If I could talk with her about it, I wouldn't be here talking with you about it. And so it gradually sort of dawned on me that they were actually afraid to talk with their wives. And so I started broaching that question with them carefully, because it's not normally a polite thing to do to suggest to a man that he's afraid, much less afraid of a woman. So I started, and I would intentionally use the word scared or afraid for the most impact. And again, I got the same reaction repeatedly. The first response would be they'd bow up, they'd sit up in their chairs and kind of puff out their chests and insist that they were not afraid. And then literally within a minute, you could just see the recognition come over their faces. And they would say something like, you know, that makes a lot of sense and would kind of explain a lot. And so I started talking a lot about men, with men, about their fears of women. And really, you know, the book is dedicated to those men because they're the ones who taught me about it. And I've spent literally thousands of hours with men, listening to them talk about their fears of women. And it has been an education for me, to say the least. I've learned a lot.
That's great. And that's why I wanted you on the show, because, you know, a lot of, I would say the majority of the people who listen to this podcast are women. The majority of the people that I coach, as a divorce coach, are women. It's just naturally how the chips fall. And I think that has a lot to do with what you said about men. There's something about men, you know, reaching out for help, acknowledging that they need help, and seeking that help out, and kind of showing that vulnerability.
Women have a different reaction to the idea. They have the first the similar first reaction, but it doesn't change for them. They remain convinced that I've lost my mind, that it absolutely cannot possibly be true that men are afraid of them, because there are so many ways in which men are in a more powerful, controlling position that it's really inconceivable for women that men are afraid of them.
Is that what you find with your female patients?
Yes.
Wow, that's
adamantly, so insistently, argumentatively.
Argumentative, right? And don't argue with them, because...
Well, because men are trained to never, you know, the old never let them see you sweat. Men are trained to not let anybody know that they're afraid. And they're so good at it that even their life partners don't know.
So let's dive into this a little bit. There's so much to cover. We can't possibly do it in one show. So maybe we'll do a whole series with you. but for today, let's talk about some of the biggest fears that you come across when you are working with men.
Sure. In the book, I suggest that there are 7 fears that men have of women, and I give them in order, by which I mean that I start with the fears that are more recognizable because they are more conscious fears for men, and I work deeper towards the more underlying fears. So I won't go through all of them, but I'll just hit a couple of highlights for you. So one that most people recognize is men are afraid of being dominated or controlled by women. And this comes clearly out of the socialization that men receive that A, they're supposed to be in charge at all the time, and B, that they're not supposed to need anything from anyone. And so they're very resistant to the idea that a woman might dominate or control them. So my choice for the title, which the publisher probably wisely rejected, is I wanted to call the book Pussy Whipped, which is how the book begins, with that phrase. And I pose the question, why is it that the worst thing that one, the biggest insult that one man can say to another man is that he's controlled by a woman? Or even more precisely, that he's controlled by his need for.
I'm sorry, controlled by the...
His need for a woman. It's pussy whipped. It's not whipped, you know, controlled by... It's controlled by a particular aspect of a woman, which is their ability to be a sexual partner.
Right.
And so the worst insult for men is to say, you are not your own person. You are not independent because of your need of a woman.
Yeah. I mean, where does that come from?
It comes from the socialization. It comes from patriarchal socialization. It comes from men being taught to that. There's an interesting part of the literature now that talks about fragile masculinity. And the idea is that femininity is inherent, that women are born identifying as girls and then women. And it's something that just comes with being born genetically woman. Men are taught that they are not born men, but that masculinity is something that has to be earned. And sadly, masculinity is largely defined not proactively, but reactively. Mostly we define masculinity in this culture as not feminine. So then men are taught that they have to be not feminine to be masculine. And then they have to always be on guard for any indication that anybody might take as being feminine. Unfortunately, that includes things that we all want and need, like warmth and tenderness and intimacy and closeness. So men have this horrible sort of Sophie's dilemma between the closeness and tenderness that they experience as a child, but they're expected to relinquish that, to revoke that in order to be a man.
And is it because the feminine aspect of life is considered, or they're taught, men are taught that's indicative of weakness?
Yes, not masculine.
Right. And so you have to be, you know, that prototypical strong man, the hunter. I think it all goes back to the hunter and gatherers. I really do.
Well, there's a really interesting story I came across from an anthropologist about a coming of age ritual in a particular tribe somewhere in the jungle. And like many of these rituals, the boys lived in the women's hut with their mom until a certain age. And the men come in the middle of the night and they're dressed in scary outfits and they terrify the boy and they take him out in the woods and they put him through all these rituals of manhood. Then he comes back to the village. Now he's a man. And in this particular culture, the boy's mother goes out to meet him at the edge of the village. And the boy is instructed to slap his mother and then go to the woman's hut and get his things and move into the men's hut. So my question is, what function does the slap serve? Why not just go get your things, say, hi, mom, go get your things and move to the men's hut? What function does the slap serve?
It must be breaking that emotional bond.
It's to show the men that he is a man, that he has revoked his mother. He is no longer tied to his mother. He has to prove to them that he is no longer associated with the feminine in any way, shape, or form, and is ready to join the world of men, which one does by rejecting the feminine.
That's so interesting to me. And I always kid, I say this all the time. You know, if I wasn't an attorney, I would have been a psychologist, but you know, I couldn't do statistics. So in college, they made you take not basic, but also, you know, the second level, and I wouldn't have passed basic. So
I did a qualitative dissertation. The only statistics in my dissertation are the page numbers.
Yeah. You know, and so I minored. You didn't have to take statistics, but I love it. I love psychology and getting into the weeds of it all, but I can't help wonder, and I don't want to go down a rabbit hole here, but tell me if there's any similarity with this. You know, so men grow up being socialized and taught what it means to be a man, right? Some of the things that you just talked about, strength and not being feminine.
Exactly.
But when we start talking about relationships and intimate relationships, when a man, let's say is courting a mate.
Yes.
There usually is some period of time there where they have to show their emotional side, right? That is part of the courting process and why a woman would be attracted to a man in the first place. In addition, you know, women, you know, stereotypically want, you know, a strong man. Okay. But they also want, you know, they say they want a man who is in touch with their feminine side, right? And can open up to them and communicate. And somehow men do this to get married.
Yes.
So what happens if they can somehow muster up the ability to change how they act, even if they're faking it? They have to do it usually for a substantial period of time, right? In order to get engaged and then get married. And then the marriage doesn't break down usually right away.
Right.
It takes time, sometimes years. So what happens there that if the man was showing any feminine side or you know, the communication breaks down in the relationship, which causes a divorce. So I'm just, it's astonished. What is happening in that dynamic?
First of all, I noticed you said women say they want, which I think you're making a very important distinction, because if you go to your local, I guess they still have books in supermarkets, right? But if you go to the supermarket checkout line, I don't know if they have books anywhere these days, but you know, there used to be books there, sort of, you know, popular books.
Yeah, the magazines.
A lot of them were women's romance books. And those books are also known as bodice rippers.
What was that?
Bodice rippers.
Okay, I never heard of that.
The books are about men forcefully taking women.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I
go to any bookstore and look under women's fiction, and you will find books about women being taken almost against their will. So for women, it's their erotica is often very tied to the kind of traditional masculinity that the culture tells men they shouldn't be. So the New York Times ran a great story. They went to schools and they asked boys, like I think they were middle school boys, what did you learn about sexuality and where? And the boys said, well, everything I learned about sex, I learned online from porn.
Right.
And what I learned, if you think about what's in porn, what I learned is that women are turned on when men are dominant, controlling, a little rough. And the boys are terrified because they feel inadequate because that's not them. And so they worry that a woman will not be attracted to them if they're not like the guys they see in porn. But let me come back to your question.
Yeah, the health teachers have to do a better job, but go ahead.
What?
I said the health teachers at school have to do a better job.
I hope so. Your question is really spot on. So there, I think there's a fork in every marriage and it goes one of two ways. It goes towards we're going to work it out and stay together, or we're going to get divorced, since that's the topic of your show and your listeners' interest. And that fork in the road looks like this. So we're going to go back for a minute to childhood. At some point, well, boys and girls start off playing together.
Right.
At some point, they segregate by gender. Girls play with girls, boys play with boys. Girls play games in which they practice relationships. They play all fantasy games. They play games, house, doctor,
family,
school. They're learning about, and they talk with each other about relationships. So by the time girls come to dating, they are PhDs in relationships. Boys, on the other hand, practice games that prepare them to conquer the world. Boys practice games of competition and aggression. We used to play cops and robbers and sports. Every game we played had some elements of competition and aggression. So when we get back to dating, when we get interested in dating in girls, we don't know what the hell they're talking about. So men at that point are used to being dominant and powerful in the world. They're the ones who are going after the CEO jobs and the captain and this, that, and the other. But in relationships, they are at a disadvantage, which is really A, unfamiliar to them, and B, very, very uncomfortable to them.
Exactly, which is why, you know, so often you see, I mean, you do see it portrayed in TV and movies, but it, just real life, men, you know, they have a first date with somebody and they have no idea what to do. Bring them flowers, you know, walk them, exactly. Go up. What do I do?
That's the fork in the road.
Right.
One group of guys who are going to stay married get to that fork and they go, clearly she knows a lot more about relationships and closeness and feelings than I do. Nobody's around to see what I'm doing. I'm going to let her teach me about how to be close to another human being. Those marriages go very well. The other guys get to that fork and they're too scared to do that. And they say, well, she's not the boss of me. I'm not going to let her control me. I'm going to get my man cave and take care of myself. And those marriages don't go well. I wrote a column for Psychology Today. I don't remember the title, but it basically said, everything I need to know about relationships, I learned from my rabbits. I had two rabbits. I had a female rabbit who had been raised with other rabbits and knew what to do to court, and a male rabbit who had been raised by himself and didn't know what to do. So we brought the male rabbit in. We had the female rabbit first. We brought the male rabbit in, and the female rabbit would initiate courting behavior. And the male rabbit would not respond, at which point she would take a bite out of him, literally, and fur would go flying. Well, after about 2 or 3 days, he learned what it was that rabbits were expected to do in courting behavior, and they were fabulously happy together. But she took a little piece out of his fur to teach him, like, no, that's not it. That's not how you do it. And he was willing to learn, and so things went well.
So are you suggesting we bite each other?
I think that women would identify with that story because they would say, it's like the old joke with the farmer and the mule and the 2x4. What's the 2x4? Well, first you got to get the mule's attention. I think women identify with the story in the sense that they often feel like it takes a 2x4 to get a man's attention.
And, you know, as a fellow man, I can appreciate that. But you would think that fork in the road would come before you get married, you know, because they're dealing with each other and they're you know, a relationship is progressing from dating to intimacy to seriousness.
Yeah, but we don't see each other for who we are when we're dating. We see each other for who we hope we'll be.
Yeah, you hit it on the head.
And so, you know, it's the old saying, men marry women hoping they'll never change and they do, and women marry men hoping they will change and they don't. So I think, love, at least in its early stages, is largely fantasy and projection. So we don't see the person for who they are. And if you're lucky, your unconscious sort of guides you towards a good choice that is deeper and more satisfying than when I hear people who are dating talk to me about what they're looking for, it's patently absurd. I mean, the minutia details that people are like, I remember my roommate in graduate school told me he was attracted, you know, this is like 40 years ago, I still remember, told me he was attracted to women's forearms. I'm like, really? That's what's going to make a happy life? And I don't even know what he thought, you know, distinguished an attractive forearm from an unattractive.
I've never heard that one before.
I have never heard it since.
But
maybe he'll recognize himself.
It's just so true. The things that we focus on when we are younger, we laugh at now as we get older. Yes. But there's no way to, you know, I have an 8-year-old daughter and I could already see that starting now. There's no way to convince somebody generations behind you of what's coming, because it's the classic, you know, they don't believe you, or it's not, you know, it's the old guy talking. It's not the same for me. And you just have to go through life to get to that point. I think that's no other way around it. You just have to.
I think that's largely true, but I think we could be a little more helpful in what we say to young people. So one of the things I say to young people is, you know, you got your eye, you're watching the wrong thing. You don't want to watch what they do that you don't like. That's going to happen. What you want to watch is what they do after you tell them you don't like it.
Mm. Excellent.
Because a marriage is a growth stock, right? You're not marrying the person you see in front of you now. You're marrying the person he or she is going to be in 20 years. And the best way to tell what they're going to be in 20 years is whether or not they adapt and change and grow during the time they're with you. And if they do, you probably are with somebody who will continue to adapt and change and grow.
Well, that's it. People change throughout life. That's inevitable. The idea is that you want to change together.
Yes.
In the same direction.
Well, I don't think necessarily the same direction. I think it's more you want to be with somebody who welcomes whatever direction you change in. It may not be convenient, but it's somebody who embraces that change in you because it's good for you.
Right. But if you are changing, let's say, in different directions, whether politics or morality or whatever, and your vision for how you wanted to spend your life changes, that creates conflict, right?
Well, those are two different things. The first part you talked about differences. The second part you talked about how you want to spend your life together. Those are really profoundly different.
Okay.
So how you want to spend your life together, that's a problem. Differences, I think, are exaggerated. First of all, the research says that conflict is not the primary cause of divorce.
Right.
High conflict marriages do not lead to divorce any more than low conflict marriages. So I always think it's amusing when couples talk about differences, because I'm sitting in a room looking at a man and a woman, right? And they're telling me that their difference in how they want a vacation is the big issue in the marriage. I'm like, really? Like, somehow you got past the male-female thing, but vacation is a difference that you can't get past?
Like, right.
If you're heterosexual, obviously difference is not a problem for you.
Right, right. And you hit it on the head there. Conflict is inevitable. It's,
yes.
In my mind, it's how you deal with the conflict.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
And all right. You see, I told you there's so much to go down. I feel like we're all over the place, but this is great.
Well, I'll tell you where we left off was that, let me just run a couple of the other common fears.
Yeah, so I was going to get into that.
Go ahead.
No, go.
Well, the first fear,
I think, ends in, I would summarize everything we just said kind of like, you know, goes back to the old adage, love is blind, right? When you're dating.
Yeah.
And all right, let's talk about another fear.
So another field that's very important because it helps people understand a lot is that men are terrified of women's emotions. And this is why in conflict, first of all, it's why men are so notoriously conflict avoidant, and also why men work so hard to control conflict and keep it rational and impersonal and get so flustered when women get more emotional. Now, that's pretty widely recognized. What people don't understand is why that is. And the reason that that happens is that emotions are as contagious as a yawn. When you're around somebody who's feeling happy, you feel happy. When you're around somebody who's feeling anxious, you feel anxious. So when women get emotional, men get emotional, and they don't like the way that feels because they don't feel equipped. They don't know what to do with those feelings. So since they don't know how to soothe themselves, they try to suppress emotion in their partners so that they don't feel as emotionally out of control.
Because that's how arguments start, you know. Yes. If one side, I guess we'll go with the woman in this case, you know, is becoming emotional.
Yes.
I almost feel like, you know, at first the man, and I've been guilty of this, you know, trying to calm it down, you know, let's just take it down a notch and talk about this in a business-like manner, right? But that makes them more mad.
How do women react to that?
Makes them worse.
Right. Because they're getting emotional in an effort to make a connection. And in response, what they're getting is shut down. So they ramp up even more and the men shut down even more.
They want you to become emotional.
Yes.
Right.
Because it is a form of, you know, fighting feels more connected than estranged. And so people often prefer, it's why you see couples having trouble letting go in a divorce. You wonder, like, you've been divorced for 6 months, but you're still fighting with each other. It's the only form of attachment they still have with each other.
Right. Right. No, I see that all the time.
Yeah.
And you know, they say they're getting divorced, which means they don't want to have anything to do with each other.
Right.
But yet they can't let go. And so I always think to myself, well, which is it? You know, should you guys be in counseling or what do you want?
Yeah, I spoke with somebody this morning who's been separated for over a year and they were having an argument about how much she spent on clothing.
Which maybe they're perfect for each other.
Right? Any of his business.
Right.
Yeah.
So dealing with that fear of men, I guess, not wanting to emote, you know, what's a tip, if you have any, to that you give to men, you know, to handle that?
The tip I give to men is that you're most likely to develop that skill, not with your wife, but with other men, that it is much less threatening to men to learn how to be more emotionally open talking with other men than it is trying to start off talking with your wife. And so there's a chapter in the book that is written for men who are interested in getting together with other men and learning to be more sort of emotionally fluent in order to then be able to go into their relationships and feel less threatened.
Sort of like a men's group that is targeted for that.
Yes, exactly.
Otherwise, right, you're not talking about men getting together with other men who are just what's the word I'm looking for here? Promoting the type of manlyhood that got them into this place in the first place.
Yeah. Right. No, this is, I mean, there are sort of step-by-step guidelines for people who might, I say start a book group and start off reading the book because you'll find a lot there that will help you connect with other men.
Yeah, that's a great way to start is by going through your book and talking about it, right?
One of the biggest surprises of my professional career was I started doing psychotherapy groups with men about 12 years ago. And I remember distinctly the night before I was about to do the first group. And I thought, this is the worst idea I've ever had. They're going to talk sports. They're going to talk politics. They're going to talk work. But they won't talk to each other in any kind of personal, intimate way. I've never been more wrong in my professional life. From the beginning, they started opening up and talking with each other in ways that mixed groups take longer to do. And what I learned is men are just as eager to connect with other human beings as women do. You just wouldn't know it if you're watching them in mixed company.
And I wonder if it has something to do, And then we're nearing the end here, but I wonder if that has something to do with just men obviously feeling comfortable.
Yes.
Because when they can open up with other men,
yes,
they're not getting into arguments about it like they would with their spouse.
Men are less threatening to men. This is why men resist going to therapy, because they anticipate that it's not going to be their home turf. It's not going to be a home game. It's going to be an away game. And they're worried that the therapist will endorse the same values that their wife does and essentially gang up on him, and that he will be not only not understood, but essentially blamed. And sadly, that is often what happens.
I was about to say, I hear that quite commonly, that that's what happens.
Absolutely.
And then you never get them back.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, I feel like that's, you know, too bad. That's bad for the therapist. Maybe they're not the...
Well, it's an interesting topic in the field, because I have been making the argument in the field for some time and not exactly getting a lot of glowing positive response, that men are an underserved minority in psychology. And that, so we require therapists to take ethics training every couple of years in how to work with people of color, how to work with gender minorities, all those things we think therapists should train in. But 49% of the world, we don't think therapists need training in that. So I think the American Psychological Association finally has published a set of guidelines for psychotherapy with boys and men, which is a fabulous step. And I think we should require therapists who want to work with men to learn something about what men are like.
Right.
That's a crazy idea.
It's out of this world. I mean,
I know.
I don't know the original publication date of, you know, men are from Mars, women are from Venus. But like, this is not new stuff that men and women are different, and you need to approach them differently.
Right. But we don't really take that very seriously, or we're not, you know, in the current climate, we're not so interested in the lives, the internal lives of men, which is terribly sad, because, you know, men are not doing well. Men, there's a whole area now, they're talking about deaths of despair. So middle-aged, particularly white men, but not just white men, the mortality rate is going up, not down. Every other demographic, people are living longer. Middle-aged men, their lifespan is going down. And it is primarily deaths of addiction and suicide.
Wow. Yeah, that's not encouraging. So I hope we can change that.
I certainly do.
All right. Well, Doctor, thank you for being on the show. I will have to have you on again, because I feel like we've just scratched the surface. But, you know, we've covered a couple of the fears. Now everybody can read your book and get the rest. And I think it's going to be a great resource, both for men and women. Would you?
Oh, no, absolutely. I think more women read the book than men, actually. And I do want to say one thing to your listeners, which is I pride myself on answering every email I get. And I know a lot of people don't do that. But if you are interested in this topic and you have questions, you will find my email address. It's in the book. And also at avramweissphd.com, you'll find. And if you sign up on the mailing list there, you get a free ebook.
Awesome. Yeah. And for everybody listening, right, you don't get access to people like him every day. So take him up on it.
Yep.
And where's the best place for people to find you?
AvramWeissPhd.com.
Okay. And we'll have that link in the show notes
there,
too.
And you can join the mailing list there.
Excellent. Thank you so much for being on the show.
My pleasure.
I enjoyed talking with you. We'll do it again soon.
Sounds good.
All right. Episode 99 in the books, as they say. I hope you enjoyed that episode talking about men, their fears, and intimate relationships. Why? Because the more we understand about each other, the better and healthier relationships we will have in the future. So please subscribe to the podcast if you want new episodes when they come out. I try to make it a great divorce resource for you, and spread the word if you think others might be interested. Now, if you're looking for divorce help for your situation, reach out to me. I offer group and one-on-one divorce coaching options. I can get on a complimentary strategy call with you. Jason at JasonLavoie. Email me. Tell me you got it from the podcast, and we'll get that scheduled right away. In the meantime, all I'm going to ask you to do is be strong, act confident, and stay positive. I'm Jason Lavoie, a.k.a. The Divorce Resource Guy, and I'll be seeing you real soon.